Blog Talk Radio.
Here to be a part of it. It is Thursday, August the 10th. I think that's what day it is. And we have a lot to get to on today's show. So listen, first of all, make sure that you share the video. There's a little button down below. And also, in addition to sharing the video, I'm also asking if you will sign up to be notified when I go live. Now that I've moved the show to the Kim Y. Davis page, I want to make sure that you don't miss it. So sign up for the notifications, and you'll get updates when we are about to go live. Welcome. It is officially football season. Okay, it's been football season. Well, it's always football season, right? We know that. But it's football season because the Houston Texans and other teams, okay, have had preseason games. The Texans had their first preseason game last night. They lost to the Panthers in Carolina. We are going to talk about that and a whole lot more. Okay, but also, we're going to talk about some baseball because the Houston Astros are for real in a pennant race. Now, they're struggling in Chicago. They have not been able to muster up any offense against the White Sox, but they're still 71-42, which puts them at the top of the American League West. So a lot to still, you know, be happy about with the Houston Astros. And how often are we really talking about the Astros in August, right? And we are approaching mid-August. So we have August and all of September in the regular season, then it's postseason, and we're hoping the Astros continue to be to lead the American League West. They have at times dropped out of the number one spot in terms of the best record in all of baseball. But first things first, win the AL West. Having the best record in the American League would be great. Having home field advantage at least until, you know, throughout to start the playoffs would be pretty exciting stuff. So I am a baseball fan. If you follow this show, you know that I enjoy baseball. So I am really excited about what's happening with the Houston Astros. They're on the road right now, and they will be on the road for about another week. They come home not this weekend, but the following weekend. So when they leave Chicago, they go and play the Rangers, and then I believe they go and face the Arizona Diamondbacks, if I have that right, in terms of their schedule. But in the meantime, we do have some football to talk about. We have Houston Texans action from last night. So also, let me write this. Make sure that you share the video. I'll remind you that there's a little button to the right below, and you can share the video so that your friends and your network can also be a part of this week's show and every week's show because, as you know, we are building a tribe. All right, so what are we going to talk about today? Well, you know, we're going to talk about Houston Texans football. We're going to talk about the rookies, right? Bill O'Brien has been very clear with saying that Tom Savage is going to be the starter on this team. He will be the starting quarterback when the season opens. And so he started last night. He started the game. He also said going into this first preseason game that all the quarterbacks would get some playing time, and that's what happened. Now, Deshaun Watson got a lot of time, and, you know, he looks promising. I heard from a couple guys who are NFL veterans or guys who retired from the league who said this kid's special. They really like him. Now, we can look at some things. We can say maybe there was some, you know, he had some throws that were, you know, that, you know, weren't terribly accurate. I think those are things that he's going to work through, right? One of the things that was impressive to me is that the speed of the game didn't seem to be too much for him. And that tends to be one of the things that happens with rookies when they come into the league. The game speeds up a lot. So, okay. the game speeds up a lot. So look like we're having some challenges with getting it on our Facebook Live. I know we're live on Blog Talk Radio. So if you happen to be on Facebook Live, check it out now. If you are not, jump over to Facebook Live because that's where the show will broadcast from. It is not broadcasting from my personal page, but from my business page, which is the Kim Y. Davis page. And I'm going to check right now to make sure that you guys can see us. Okay, let me see here what we got. I don't see us yet. All right, hang on a second, everybody. Let me check and find out. All right, so I'm working out the technical stuff that's happening to get us make, because I think one of the challenges is you guys may be on the other page, but make sure that you come on over to the Be Live page on the Kim Y. Davis page. There you are. Good morning, Marcy. Welcome, welcome. You know, I've got to get you guys used to coming over to the Kim Y. Davis page. Be sure and share the video so that you can, let me try this again. I'm trying to bring in my guests so that you can be in the right place. All right? There we go. So you get to the right place. Good morning, Marcy Brooks. Welcome, welcome. Hey, Marcy, let me ask you, did you see any of the Texans game last night? I'm just curious. I know it's preseason, and a lot of people say, well, this isn't great football. You know, they don't really play the starters the whole time. But in this city, if you're a Houston Texans fan, and really around the National Football League, you're kind of interested because it's your opportunity to see some of the young players, to see the rookies, to see what they look like and get a chance to see what they might be able to contribute. So I was really looking forward to seeing the game last night, to getting a look at a few things, definitely to get a look at Deshaun Watson. Tom Savage, taking nothing from him, looked good. Tom Savage had a good, you know, I think he played about three series, and he had a touchdown pass. He looked good last night. You know, I think we all know that. Marcy says, I'm so sorry I did not see the game. I attempted to watch, but no, I understand. That's okay. I'm going to tell you what you missed. And a lot of people, you know, it was a Wednesday night, which is a little odd for National League football. But listen, Deshaun Watson is something that I, as a person, I really wanted to get a look at and see, you know, how he's coming along because I haven't seen him in any NFL game action. Obviously, it was his first time playing in an NFL game, albeit preseason. It was his first time playing in a game, and he looked pretty good. He is a rookie, you know. He looked pretty poised. You know, his feet weren't like dancing around a whole lot in the pocket. I think that's a good sign in terms of. It means he's really paid attention and been studying the playbook, I think, and so he's finding some level of comfort in that. We know he's talented, and I think the other things in terms of his, you know, his footwork, people talk about his footwork isn't great yet, but he is still, you know, listen, it's week one of preseason. The other things you saw, him being poised, making good decisions. Hey, good morning, Andre. Welcome. Hello, hello. And, hey, you guys, please make sure that you share the video. Push the share button and let your friends and your community know that you are here. And I'm really trying to get people accustomed to coming to this page because I'm broadcasting the show from my Kim Y. Davis page now. And so it takes a while to get people used to coming here. They're so used to being over on my personal page, but we need to be here on Kim Y. Davis so that we can grow it, and we're limited with what we can do on the other page. So welcome, Andre. I'm glad to see you. Andre, what did you think about last night? Did you watch the Texans game, and do you have any thoughts about what you saw from Deshaun Watson? Sean is going to join us. He's having a hard time logging on. I think there's been some technical stuff with Be Live this morning, but he will be here shortly, hopefully, because he only has a few minutes to visit with us. But then I do have all of you, and that's great. Let me tell you some observations that I had about Deshaun Watson last night. I thought he As I said, I thought he looked poised. I thought he made some pretty good decisions. You know, he had, I'm sure, a couple passes that he'd like to have a do-over on. And when we talk about the Texans' offense, here's an area that I have some concern about early, and that's the offensive line. And with good reason, I hear you on that. Andre said he didn't see the game. He's trying to decide whether or not I'm supporting football this season. I understand, and we did a whole show last week talking about Colin Kaepernick and we know it's not fair. We know that what's happening to him is unjust, and I think it's just flat-out ridiculous. I think it speaks volumes to what NFL owners think about the plight of African-Americans. You know, they would rather minimize or act like Black Lives Matter is not a real movement, that there are not real problems in our society, than support someone who has been nothing but really a model citizen. You know, I always shudder when I hear people want to compare Colin Kaepernick to guys like Ray Lewis or Michael Vick. You know, I'm glad Michael Vick, you know, he did his time for the whole, you know, dog fighting felony charge that he faced and the conviction he had. And since then, it seems like he's been a model citizen in terms of he's been a spokesperson for animal cruelty, being against animal cruelty, and he's doing a lot of those things right. And so good for him. You know, I want to make sure I acknowledge him for doing that. I am, however, bothered when they pluck him out and he has comments, the kind of comments he's had about Colin Kaepernick and Ray Lewis, who, of course, beat a murder charge in the many years ago in Atlanta. Was it 2000, 2002? After that, I don't remember which game it was, but after the Super Bowl. And for him to now have these comments and thoughts about Colin Kaepernick, it's frustrating to me, and it's really disappointing. But my other point is you cannot compare Colin Kaepernick to what's happened with a Ray Lewis, who was accused and charged with a felony, murder. He was acquitted, so he was not convicted of murder, but it was a pretty serious charge. And then Michael Vick, who was tried and convicted with this dog fighting thing. Colin Kaepernick has not been accused of a crime. He has not been arrested. He has not committed a felony. And so it's not the same thing. So don't let people have a conversation with you where they want to lump those players in the same category, in the same box. Not acceptable, not at all. So I understand, Andre, whether, you know, you weren't sure about watching it, but I get it. I mean, we talked about the boycott. What's the best way to send a message to the National Football League? And here's the thing. It's really difficult to make a difference with the owners, because it's really about the owners, when they are making a ton of money, right? They get their money from the broadcast rights. That's not changing. The season ticket holders, they already have their money. The sponsors are already in. They have their money. So it doesn't mean that nothing can be done, but it does make it challenging, because when you don't hurt them in their pockets, it's hard to make them pay attention, right? It's hard to make them pay attention. I really wish the NFL, the players union, would step up. And it has been disappointing to see, hey there, good morning, Sylvia, my sister. Welcome, welcome. She came back. You were back from your cruise last week. So good morning, welcome. Make sure you share the broadcast, everybody. It is, when you think about players who've gotten second chances in the National Football League who have, you know, been involved in domestic violence, you know, have had drug charges and issues, drug violations repeatedly, have committed other sorts of, you know, crimes, DUIs, manslaughter. I mean, we have these players in the National Football League. So, you know, and Colin Kaepernick is somehow not worthy of a spot. I struggle with that. Andre says, I think he has the grounds for a lawsuit. But I don't know who he would sue because it's not as like, not as though the owners have come out and publicly said, we are colluding, you know, we are not going to sign him because we think it would hurt our brand and we think that our other fans would not be supportive of him being a part of our roster. I don't think, I don't know. I mean, he definitely is being wrongfully, you know, left to the side. You know, there's no question about that. But I don't know how, who he would sue and based on what, right? So it's interesting. It's an interesting time. And, you know, I think actually they did. Well, I don't know that there's been a public, you know, statement. I think we understand that about them. I think we know that's what's happening. We know that there have been conversations, but they haven't, you know, I don't know that they've made the public statement that we're just not going to sign him because we don't like what he represents. I don't know that that's happened because that would be a clear violation of his First Amendment right because what he did was exercise his First Amendment right. Now, you could always say it's private industry, and it is, and they can do what they want, and they can, and they do. But the question becomes, what does everybody else do? And I really think that here's the real thing is the owners want to make sure they don't let the other players think that they can stand up for things they believe in. We're going to put him in his place so that the rest of you will stay in your places and that you won't do anything to, you know, for some cause you believe in or for the very same cause of, you know, a Black Lives Matter, a police brutality, stand up for it and talk against it. And so it is the whole, if we keep him down, the others around will say, man, I don't want to risk my job, my opportunity, so I'm just going to, man, you know, hey, good luck with that, Colin, but I'm just going to do what I do. I've seen far too much of that for my liking. I get it, kind of, but I really don't like it. So, anyway, you were listening to Chalk Talk, and I guess Sean's not going to be able to join us. He couldn't log in, and I know he has a call. He had an obligation at 10:30. But we are going to roll along. I wanted to talk a lot about what's happening with the Texans and Deshaun Watson. And I can't really talk about Deshaun Watson without talking about Dwayne Brown. So Dwayne Brown is still holding out. The Texans don't seem to be looking like they're moving off of their stance, which is players on the contract need to show up for camp. And Dwayne really just wants to make sure that his last couple years are solid and have some guarantee that he'll be here. And I think he wanted an additional year. But they missed Dwayne Brown, okay? There's just no question about it that they missed Dwayne Brown. and I was listening to some people this morning, and here he is. Good morning, Sean. Oh, are you dressed?
Yeah.
Okay, I was making sure you...
Oh,
okay. Well, welcome. We have Sean Jones is joining us, and I know your time is limited because you have a previous...
We're good. I had to push it back because I was stealing some of your time. It was something to get in here. It's interesting. I've never used this format before, and it's very interesting.
Well, stick with me. You'll learn all kinds of interesting things. So, first of all, welcome. I'm glad you could join us. We've been talking a little bit about, he went away. He'll be back. It may be that you have an internet connection challenge, but Sean will join us when he can figure it back out in just a moment. But we are talking about the Texans preseason game, and really also we're talking about, there you go. So sometimes, Sean, what happens is it's the internet connection. So you probably got some janky internet.
That's true.
So tell me, I'm guessing you did. Did you watch the game last night?
I did.
And your thoughts overall, and then I'm going to ask you specifically about the rookies.
I thought that offensively they got up to a rocky start. I think that what O'Brien's going to have to realize is that, one, New England's great because they have 12 back there. And you don't have 12 back there, then you have to change things up a little bit to the personnel that you have. You know, sometimes head coaches get caught up in scheme.
Right.
And they're stubborn that way, and they don't adjust to the people and the personnel that they have. So I think it's going to require Bill O'Brien to really adjust his team to the personnel that he has. So that was obvious the first two series where they were trying to hold the ball, go through progressions, and they couldn't hold up. Then he switched up and started getting the ball out quicker, and they had success. And they ran the ball effectively, too, which set up a lot of different things. So I think that's what you're – hopefully that's what they take away from it. That I think they need to become a running team more so than a passing team because of the inexperience of the quarterbacks, whoever you go with. There's going to be a level of inexperience. And the worst thing you can do, the best thing for a young quarterback is a good running game and a good defense. And so if they can run the ball effectively and limit the quarterback to about 25, 30 throws a game, I think they could have some success. That's what I saw.
So when you say 12, of course, you're talking about Tom Brady, who is he is the standard, especially with this offense, because that's what the offense that the Texans team runs. How concerned are you about the offensive line? And clearly they need to try to work it out and get Dwayne Brown in.
But he's just a piece, right?
Right.
And I don't think that they are built right now. They're not talented enough to be effective pass blockers. They're solid run blockers, I would say. Tua Fuller gives up way too much in the passing game for you to be consistently effective, because once he breaks down, everybody else breaks down too. And you have some other guys that are scrappers and fighters, but they're not talented as pass blockers. And you saw that again. You saw it the first two series. I mean, it was like a jailbreak. They just kept pushing people back in Savage's lap, and he didn't get rid of the ball quickly enough. And you can't afford that. It's the first preseason game. I mean, guys should be ready. They should be ready to go. You know, your first unit anyhow. It shouldn't be that much of a jailbreak. And so it was the same way last year. You can blame Oswald all you wanted to, but the combination of a guy that's not a very good player with not a very good pass offense is just not a bad formula. It's not a good formula. And so that's kind of like what we saw. So I think if they, you know, you have a three-headed monster in Miller and Blue and now Foreman, that you should be able to effectively run the ball. And the guys up front, I think they're more comfortable as run blockers than they are as pass blockers. And so I think, you know, you can't play a game and run the ball 50 times, but you can sure not have to throw the ball 50 times, and that's really a choice.
So, and I get that. I mean, the offensive line isn't great. It's not a great unit, which is why I think they really can't afford to not – I mean, you don't want to have two big question marks at both of your tackle spots, right? I mean, you know, Dwayne gives you some confidence with, I think, a younger player, because whoever plays is going to be a young quarterback and will need that support. Your right tackle, you're not sure about. And then your guards are, I mean, you don't have any necessarily great, great pieces. Martin, you may be a little more confident with him at center. And, you know, they talked about Lamb, but I think that left tackle spot, you want to get that spot shored up. Even though they may not be a great offensive line, that doesn't help.
No, sure. I mean, you're not good already. You weren't good last year with your Pro Bowl tackling. He was, you know, he showed you that it's not going to be out. I can come back from an injury, and look, I can still play at a high level. And he did. Brown played for all intents and purposes. I mean, he played at a high level last year coming back. And I expect him to do the same when he comes back. He'll be back. He'll be back. But, you know, Rick Smith does some interesting things as a GM. For no reason, he extends a Brian Cushing. No reason. And then a guy like this that you need as a part of it. I understand GMs don't like to be held hostage. Mm-hmm. They don't like to negotiate with terrorists, as it may. You know, and they don't like to be held over a barrel. But at some point, you know, it's hard to, when you do things like you do with a Cushing and extend him for no reason, coming off an injury, and I understand it was years ago, then it says to a guy that is there fighting through injuries, and you won't do anything for him, it's like, something's wrong here. And so I'm sure there's some of that at play, and it's own doing. You know, when you set the precedent in terms of how you handle players, and if you don't consistently handle players that way, then you're going to have a little problem in your locker room. But Brown will be in at some point. The problem that you have on the offensive line, though, is that, to your point, if you don't have all your pieces in when you're trying to put it together, then you lack the continuity that you're going to need to have success. And so now he comes in, and he's going to play, but he has to be in concert with his guard and his center and all the way down the line to make it work, and that takes time. So now you've blown off, you know, the first 4 weeks of the season, and God knows what your record is. And you're not that good where you can blow off the first 4 weeks of the season. Anyhow, so I think it's a combination of those things, and they have to do a better job of, you know, recruiting that side of the ball. They just haven't done a very good job of it.
So, you know, the offense, as you said, got off to a slow start, and I'm really curious about how O'Brien does as a signal caller this year. I have not been impressed with him, with the play calling, you know, under this regime, so we'll see how he does. But what did you think about the quarterback play of Tom Savage and then Deshaun Watson?
I thought Savage got off to a slow start, and some of it was his own doing. You know, a lot of times when – you know, quarterbacks getting pressured, it's twofold. You know, the fan will look at it and say, like I just described, and say, oh, my God, your offensive line is not blocking. Well, some of it is the quarterback has to get rid of the ball, too. There's always a man on the field that the quarterback is responsible for. And some of the time, it's time. You know, one of the thousand, I started counting. After the first series, I said, okay, let me get my pad out and just start seeing what's going on here. Start counting 1,000 to 1,000. The ball's got to be gone. I don't care who you're blocking for. There's no blocking in the NFL where it's set up for you to block for 5 seconds. Doesn't exist. The guys are too good. So he can't hold the ball that long. I don't care what play comes in from the sideline. He's got to rise above his coaching and say, okay, this is a longer route, and if it's not there, I got to get rid of the ball. And the problem that he has being a pocket passer, he's got to get himself outside the pocket to throw the ball away so he doesn't get a grounding call. So there are a lot of nuances going on with how he plays that gives him a little bit more problems, especially when you have a line in front of him that's not helping him. So now he's got to be able to be more succinct. And play calls in, yeah, I understand that. I'm feeling what's going on, how they're playing my guys. Last time he played this way, let me dump the ball out. I tell my running back, if you see this and I give you the Mary Tyler Moore sign or whatever that thing is, you know, go out and flat, let me get it to you. Let's get rid of this thing. And then let's regroup. He's got to get comfortable doing those kind of things to help himself. Now, what they did was after – third series, I think it was, They changed it up. You saw things going to the tight end. You saw things going underneath, shallow crossers. And he was more effective that way because the ball comes out. He can spin the ball. The ball comes out when and he's accurate and all those things. The other thing about Savage that people don't realize, and it's really Savage in the wide receivers, again, for some reason, and it's early, but it happened last year too with Osweiler. So at some point, you can't blame everything on Osweiler. I said this, and people are like, oh, my God, I can't believe you said this. Blasphemy. DeAndre Hopkins has to do a better job. And he's got to do a better job in a lot of ways. One, he's got to get open, and he's got to consistently get open. You want to be a big-time receiver, you got damn it, you got to get open. Mm-hmm. And then you got to bring your guys with you. You got to grab somebody, guys by the throat and be that guy. And I know he doesn't like being that vocal a leader, but he has got to be that guy where he's grabbing guys, making guys accountable, helping his quarterback out, because you can't have these long developing routes with a line that doesn't block consistently with a quarterback that's not getting the ball out quickly, and I think you're going to have favorable results. So they have to work together, and that's what happened with the Tom Savage drives. But as it came, boom, third drive, fourth drive, they put it together. Then the running game kicked in. Oh, shocking. You know, we've got a running game. That helped him too, you know what I mean? And so I think O'Brien will be crazy if he doesn't use those running backs and become more of a force running the first and 10, run the ball. Second and 7, run the ball. Third and 3, run the ball. You know, second and 6, run the ball. And then keep them off balance. Okay, second and 6, they normally run the ball. Uh-oh, here's Lamar Miller in the flat. You know, here's Braxton Miller coming around on a reverse. Those kind of things where you use the running games to manufacture yards in the passing game. And you saw some of that. I'm leading up to – you saw some of that with Deshaun Watson.
Mm-hmm.
For a young player, had great – it seemed like he had really good command of the offense, comfortable in what he was doing. If you saw nothing, even if you don't understand football, if you saw nothing else last night, you saw what people are talking about when they say a young player has it.
Right.
He just has something about him. He just looks the part. I don't know what kind of success he'll have or not have, because so much of it is the ultimate team sport, right? So much of it will depend on what kind of team you put around him. But he's unflappable. And I say that about him because he's a winner. He carries himself that way. I mean, there are some things that he did in the game that, again, as a fan, you probably probably wouldn't have seen it, but it was just nuances. Like, okay, I think it was Foreman that lined up on the wrong side for a pass protection. He calmed it down, didn't call a timeout, didn't go to the coach at the sideline and do anything. He just quietly said, no, on this side, went to the offensive line, set the protection the other way. That's the kind of stuff that Brock Osweiler couldn't do. You know what I'm saying? It's 5 years into the league, he couldn't do. And so this tells you this kid has a grasp and a calmness about him back there. It's a little different. You haven't seen that. And you ain't seen, you didn't see it in David Carr, quite honestly. I'm talking about this young quarterback. You haven't seen it in a while. The last time you've seen it, it's more like Fitzpatrick-like, to be honest with you. Fitzpatrick was able to do that. Hoyer did that somewhat, but Hoyer really relied on his arm a lot. But Fitzpatrick was a thinking man's quarterback and would walk you through where you should be and what you should do. And those little things that you're seeing early in the preseason, because he knows he, again, knowing I've got young players out here. I'm young, but I know my guys are young too. I know that, you know, I can't let my fullback stay on this side. I got to get him on the right side. I'm going to get killed. So if we put him there, he may have lined up wrong, or maybe he didn't understand it. They put him where he's supposed to be. Run a play. You know, some of those things. Those are things you saw. Did he do enough to unseat Savage? Nah. He did well playing against, you know, second-tier guys. I mean, his Clemson team could have beat that second team last, you know, who he played against last night. Some of those guys, right? He was playing against Benny and the Jets. But you know, people complain about how you play, and they will say whatever, but it's not his fault. He played against who he put in front of him, and he played well against who he put in front of him. Now, if he didn't play well, it'd be a different conversation, but he played well against who he was playing against.
So keeping it talking about the rookies, you mentioned him earlier, Dante Foreman. And so, you know, you see anything, any flashes from him that make you go, okay, I like this kid?
Yeah, toughness. Toughness, down to running, no fair dodging. I mean, he puts you in a position where you got to make a decision if you want to call home or not. You know, and tell your wife you may not be coming home. I mean, he makes you have to make that kind of decision when, but he doesn't. It's not like, okay, well, I'm going to try to avoid you. I'm going to try to run you over. And again, that physical play, that physicalness, is what you need to be able to be a running team where it's second and two, and yeah, we're going to get four. You know what I mean? So, in that regard, I saw enough of him to know that he's going to have a role. I didn't see enough of him in pass protection to have clarity as to what his role could be, you know, as an every down back. They didn't put him really in that situation often. And the one time I did see it, he had to get lined up properly. And so that's a no-no as far as I'm concerned. It's funny, we had him on our show, the bottom line, and I had to, you know, even when I had him on them, like, dude, you know, you can run the ball, but you have to, you can't play if you can't pass pro in this league. So it's something he's going to have to continue to work on and get better at. I like the young linebacker out of Vanderbilt. I thought he played well instinctively. Did some things. I think the young defensive backfield is young, you know, and they're going to have to develop and grow. But I think at the end of the day, and I'm not a Cushing basher. I'm not, okay?
Right.
But I think for you to fully mature and get everything you have to get out of this team, you need to move Cushing along so some of these young athletic players that can actually play can play. Mm-hmm. Or you have this situation where you have arrested development because they don't get a chance to develop. You don't know what you haven't. And so McKinney's going to come back. He's going to be a star this year. I don't really see a role for Cushing when you have more athletic guys that can get after it, come downhill, run side to side, make plays. They're playmakers. And I don't know why you draft them if you ain't going to play them. You know what I mean? If you're not going to put them in the position to play.
So one of the guys, everybody was waiting to see what he'd look like, and he didn't get a lot of time last night with J.J. Watt. How is he going to recover? How healthy will he be? We saw some limited action from him early, but he looks like, so far, so good. I think that's all we can really say. We know he works hard because he has an incredible work ethic. What do you expect out of J.J. Watt?
Well, first of all, I think playing J.J. Watt in this preseason game was the dumbest thing I've ever seen from any coaching staff ever. They are by far the dumbest people I've ever seen in my life.
Too soon?
There was no value in playing him. And I know he only played four or five plays, and that's my point. If you only played him four or five plays, hell, he could have wore a hat and got on the damn stationary bike on the sideline. It was not necessary. And all he did was take a chance. The risk-reward just wasn't there. He didn't have to get his feet wet. He didn't have to. You know, if you're worried about J.J. Watt being able to turn it on when the season starts, then his ass ain't ready to play. So playing him for four plays or five plays, whatever it was, and I'm going to be honest with you. If that's what a ready J.J. Watt is, then J.J. Watt is not ready to play. J.J. Watt, because I saw some stiffness, I saw some awareness issues just in the four plays. He had the one play where, and people got to watch the whole thing. He came around the corner. He beat the tackle. Big deal. That guy sucked. Beat him around the edge. Was about to make pressure. The guard came back and cleaned his clock. And I always watch not the fact that you get hit. It's how quickly you get back up. And he had a little bit of a, ooh, okay, they're hitting today.
Right.
And, you know, up off the ground a little bit. And not that it was like, oh, my God. You know, not one of those things. But as an ex-player, you see it. You notice it. That was not a, he didn't hurt me, Rocky. He didn't hurt me. That hurt. It was a hit that hurt him. To the point where he can't play anymore? No. But I'm like, why would you put him out there?
Right.
Why? That's stupid. There was no reason to put your best defensive player out there coming off of an injury this time of the year when it means nothing to anybody. I don't care what they tell you. It was dumb.
Well, so that's what you think about that. You know, I wondered that. I wondered if they would actually play him because, you know, you remember when he got hurt last year, it's because he came back too soon. There's no question about it that he came back too soon. And so it seems like someone has to be the grown-up and say, not yet. You know,
Unfortunately, the subject matter expert doesn't reside anywhere in Kirk. And that's the problem because you have an owner who relies on people that are not experts in this thing. You just hit the nail right on the head. The coaches may want him to play. The doctors may say he's okay. The player may want to play. Okay, his position coach may say, yeah, I'd like to see him. But some grown-up in the room, some grown-up that has a better vision has to say, you all are a bunch of idiots. He's not playing. I don't need my best player to play now. And that normally is supposed to be the GM. But clearly they're clueless. You don't play. I don't care. Anyone can say whatever they want to say. He got out fine. He's got to play at some point. Yeah, he does. When the season starts.
Right.
Everybody else in his position that's a quality player is walking around with a baseball cap. Turn backwards, too, because it may be confusing if it's turned forward. They may think, okay, well, they may be going, and he's going to be the first string quarterback. So I take it off and going and drop the clipboard. But when it's turned backwards, you know he ain't going there. And that's where the hat should have been the entire game.
Yeah.
You know, but for some genius reason, they wanted to play him to show that he's back, and there was no benefit from it. Zero. And then maybe you want to say, well, if he's hurt, we want to find out in preseason. No, you don't. If he's hurt, let me get him hurt on the first play of the season. You know what I'm saying? A regular game. Let me find out then. I don't need to find out in the preseason. I just don't.
And I wonder that. I wondered, you know, and how they would manage the J.J. Watt phenomenon. And so you make a really interesting point. Let me ask you, are you concerned at all about the receiving core? They lost Will Fuller, not that he was their star, but I felt like they have been at a deficit with receiver, especially in terms of veterans. Do you think they've done enough at that spot to bring in people, or, you know, am I just kind of overthinking the fact that they seem thin?
No, you're not. It was a problem last year. It remains a problem this year. And they had chances to get veteran guys like Anquan Boldin in here just to teach the guys how to play this position. Now, DeAndre Hopkins showed you last year he's not that guy to just put the team on his back and carry him by himself. He needs help. They're going to have to get that help from the tight end position because that's the only other competent position that they have where they can say, okay, you know, this is how we get the ball to people because Braxton Miller's not ready yet. That's a slot. He's still a work in progress. And then the rest of the guys are just, you know, the guys trying to figure it out and find out where they fit. You didn't like me last year. Now I've got a better role this year. I don't know where I fit. You know, you're moving me from inside to outside. And they've not done enough so far to strengthen that position where, I mean, they have quality guys, young players that can develop.
Right.
But when you look back then, you're going through a depth chart, you're getting ready to play them, there's nobody, with the exception of Hopkins, and you say, oh, my gosh, that puts a fear of God in us. I mean, we're going to have a problem. Do we have enough corners to cover all these guys? No, you're going to be able to cover them with your stock four. You know, you can just go four across, two D safety, two corners. You ain't got to bring no special nickel in or anybody to cover those guys. They're just going to play football.
Anything, let me put it this way, what excites you most? And I use the word excite. You may say nothing, Kim, but about this Texans team. Is there a position or something that you say, okay, that they have under control? I mean, that's good.
I don't know if it excites me, but to answer the question the way it's constructed, I guess the tight end position, that's the deepest position they have in offense. I'm excited about anything though with this team is the defense, to see how they can build on what they did last year. More importantly, Vrabel comes from, I was talking about this in our show yesterday too, in the bottom line, and Vrabel comes from a place where what makes New England special is not that they have phenomenal players. If you look across the board, they don't have a bunch of blue chippers on defense.
Right.
But they have versatile players. And Romeo is from that tree too, but he's a little bit different in his tree development. His branch is a lot broader, right? So he's more branch, and I mean, he's more trunk than he is branches. So he's more, not, I want to say stuck in a way, but he knows a way to do it, and he's been successful.
You did say trunk and not trunk, right?
Huh?
You said trunk and not trunk, right?
Don't say that too loud. We may be going to war. Stop it. So Vrabel being a little bit closer removed from how they do things in New England, I think he's more used to the versatile type of defense where you have guys that can do multiple things. And kind of like what I was just saying about our offense, the Texans offense, where you can go vanilla and cover him because you don't have to do a lot of things. Well, what your defense is going to be able to do under Vrabel, he's going to be able to give you multiple looks. You're not going to know where Whitney Mercilus is coming from. You're not going to know where Jadeveon Clowney is coming from. And I think in doing that, if they're smart, they will be able to put the pitch count on J.J. Watt also, because you will be able to put Jadeveon and Watt on the same side, which creates pressure. You can't block both of them. And then you can take Watt out and rest him for four or five plays and put Jadeveon at the end and then use Whitney at the other end and come up creatively in terms of how to deploy. On the back end, you can use corners as safeties, safeties as corners, you know, safeties that can drop down, that can also play in the slot. That's the kind of flexibility New England plays with Chung and McCourty and those guys. That's what they give you. You know, they give you safeties that play corners that play safeties, linebackers that play defensive line, inside, outside. And I think they're going to get more back to more of that. And the reason why I believe that's important is because defensively, which is kind of like, again, blasphemy, you were the number one defense in the league last year, but you didn't put the fear of God in nobody. Wasn't nobody scared to play you. You know, you just stopped guys from getting too many yards, and that made you the number one defense. And that's no, listen, we're going to make that comment. We also have to be mindful of that everybody else plays by the same rules, too, and they couldn't do it. You did it. You know, you're the number one defense. But I look that if they can infuse more of that versatility that I'm talking about, that I think Vrabel is going to be prone to, now you're going to have an exciting defense that takes the balls away, knocks quarterbacks out, and those kind of things, and become more of a murderer's row type of defense. So I'm looking forward to that. That's what I'm excited about.
All right. Before I let you go, there's two other things I want to ask you about. I want to talk about, because we haven't talked about it. Last week I did an entire show. It wasn't supposed to be the entire show, but we talked about the Colin Kaepernick, the fact that he didn't have a spot job in the league. And last week I had David Steele on from the Sporting News, who works out of the Baltimore, D.C. area covering the league. And, of course, last week the talk was that, you know, the Ravens needed a quarterback. But since they decided to go with Ryan Mallett, the Dolphins have signed Jay Cutler. Do you think Colin Kaepernick will get a job before the season starts? Or will he play in the NFL this season?
I think he'll play at some point this season. And I think, unfortunately for him, he'll play, he'll be put in a position where he'll fail, and then they'll want to say, I told you so. The real question is, why is he in this situation to begin with? And we should be embarrassed as a league that he's in this situation. And don't get me wrong, I said this on our show once again. Every situation, I didn't look at the Miami situation as a cabinet situation. There are too many things going against him there, socially, in terms of, you know, how people could make an argument that he wasn't a fit. And he really wasn't a scheme fit. You know, and there are a lot of teams where he's not a scheme fit. But he's a scheme fit in Seattle. He's a scheme fit in Carolina. He's a scheme fit any place where you have a scheme fit, and even in Green Bay where you have a mobile, any place you have a mobile quarterback, he's a scheme fit. People will say, well, he's not just a mobile quarterback. He doesn't have any presence in the, you know, in the drop back game at all. I'm like, okay, but I understand that. But you guys are entrusted to create offenses that take advantage of my quarterback skill set. And this guy is 3 years removed or whatever it is, from being a Super Bowl quarterback. He was good enough then. Last year, being undermanned, if you just watch the tape, and that's the other thing, too. We make the assumption that a lot of people that talk about this game actually understand it, and they don't.
Right.
Put the tape in. If you put the tape in, you saw a guy that can play in this league and deserves to play in the league, you know. And why he's not in the league is obvious. You know, people have allowed the narrative that they've created about what his protest was about and continues to be about. And we want to it's a lot easier to ignore that and not have an honest conversation about why black kids continue to get shot at these alarming rates, why the police or people, not just black kids, people, in the abuse of privilege on some police force, not all. My father's a ex-cop. My brother's ex-Air Force. So, to have a comment that he's unpatriotic or hates police is just stupid. It's ignorant. That's not what it is. Specifically, this whole protest came out of what was happening in Oakland with the sexual abuse cases with the police and some of the other things that were going on. That's how it started. That's what the narrative was. Like, this is going on with too much. What can we do about it as Americans? Blah, blah, blah. We should step in. Blah, blah. And that turns into, well, if we're not going to do anything, I'm going to sit. I'm allowed to sit because I am an American. That turns into, well, if you sit, you're unpatriotic. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense. I remember being in the press box with you the very weekend afterwards, and everyone's making such a big deal about him not standing, and they're half of their press box is sitting during the national anthem. That's quite the difference.
I say that all the time, Sean. I just, the hypocrisy is just so loud, and it's bothersome, you know? Because it's not, people aren't being honest about it.
I believe that he has to kind of like tighten up his team a little bit and make sure it's great to have a great message, but if no one is hearing it, then you need to keep driving home what the real message is and not allow the narrative to perpetuate. And with him not speaking and not saying anything, it's just too easy. It just makes it too easy for them to just say whatever they want to say. Now it's become the national conversation. Now everyone's like, well, Kaepernick's not working because, you know, he chose not to work. He doesn't want to play. If he wanted to play, he'd apologize.
Apologize for what?
What's he apologizing for? You know, apologize for the stance he took against police brutality? Apologize for what? No, apologize for being unpatriotic.
Well, he was never that. He was never unpatriotic. And what people also don't remember or want to address is that he had been taking a knee for probably three games before anything was ever said about it because no one noticed. And when he was asked, he did a good job of explaining why. He talked about the fact that it was not when the whole unpatriotic thing came up, he addressed that. But people hear what they'd like to hear. Should the NFL Players Association and Union do something or do more? I guess anything would be more. Should they do something or say something about this?
I don't think that they can do anything because if they did, you have to understand, a lot of people in power are naturally cowards, okay? And that includes the people in the Players Association and the league for that matter. And I say they're cowards not because, you know, well, I do. I mean, actually, because they will not take on the fight that needs to be taken on. They'll take the winnable fight, but they're not going to take the fight that puts their belt at risk. Okay, some people may call that being smart, right? But that's the problem with the league. And that's a problem with the Players Association. By now, the Players Association should have been much more outspoken. If this was basketball,
now,
it would be completely different. Commissioner Silver would have handled it different. The players in the league would have handled it different. But let's not give basketball a complete pass now.
Right.
But say basketball, they had Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, and they didn't treat him properly either. But I'm saying at least they learned from that situation, and they would handle it differently now. They didn't know how to handle Chris Jackson, whose correct name is Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, right? But now they do, and you see when they're put in these situations, they collectively come together, they figure out a plan, league side, player side, and they come out and they say what they have to say, keep it up for the period of time that they agree that they're going to do it, and they make it happen. The NFL can't do that. And then there's a reason, there are economic reasons. I think some of it is that we still have and I don't know who your listeners are or whatever, so I don't want to hear anything about what I'm about to say. Y'all don't understand it. It's not my job to make you understand it. That's not my job. I'm not going to tickle you to make you laugh. But the reality of what I'm about to say is that there's still a slave mentality in the NFL. It just is. And by that, a metaphor, I use that to understand that there's a plantation mentality where, you know, when you do things in the NFL, you do things to make sure that you're not pissing Massa off, that you're not doing something to really upset him. And you know, if he's not feeling well, his Massa will be sick. When we ain't sick, Massa's sick. You know what I'm saying? We have that mentality in the NFL because there's an economic reason for that. because our contracts aren't guaranteed. Basketball, they may tell you kick rocks. They don't give a damn because their contracts are guaranteed. Baseball, like, ha! You're Justin Verlander, like, trade me, don't trade me. I'm about to make this money regardless. Football players have that mentality, have that fear of that slave mentality because, and again, I'm using it as a comparison how slaves were treated, not that these rich athletes are slaves. I'm just using the mentality that, you know, I've got to do everything that I'm supposed to do so I don't piss somebody off. And in the case of slaves, lose my life, or in the case of a football player, lose my income, which is my livelihood. There's a lot of that going on, and unfortunately, that's an era that we live in. Still, after all this time, that's where football players reside.
So that's a great way to bring me to my final question before I let you go, which is that whole contract collective bargaining agreement that is so different from the NBA. I don't know that it can ever be even close or similar just because the games are different. The life expectancy of the athletes in the sport is different. But how do you ever close the gap or get a little closer to contracts that give, that change that narrative some, so it changes the kind of league that the NFL is?
Well, you know, you say this is your last point that you'd like me to respond to, but it brings us back to the first point that you brought up, and that is you have to have the mentality of a Colin Kaepernick. You have to have the mentality that, you know, I believe strongly enough about this that if I don't work, it is what it is. This is bigger than I am. And until the players understand that the fact that the NFL will go into a broadcast session with ABC, CBS, ESPN, blah, blah, blah. They'll negotiate a couple, you know, a few $100 billion deal, whatever it is. And then CBS doesn't get to come back and say, you know, it's only been, I know it's a 10-year deal. We like the first three, the next seven. We think we're just going to get rid of it. And we'll just prorate it over the next 7 years. You sign a contract, it gets to be a contract, right? And I wrote a piece about this about my in my podcast. And I say that how do the owners get us to continue playing the game while they do business? You know what I mean? And my premise in that, you know, they allow us to play this game. They allow us to keep playing the game. They got Kevin Durant to give back money so he wouldn't have to play the luxury tax, the owner, and they could go sign more players. That's not his job! But they get us to do this. You hear this? Well, he's going to get the hometown discount. Why?
Why?
You know what I'm saying?
The billionaire. The billionaire gets the discount.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, but they get us to buy into it all the damn time. So I just think it's hilarious. But to your point, the only time it's going to happen is when players, these players, and I love what Richard Sherman, people don't know what Sherman is talking about. People don't get Richard Sherman. I'm looking forward to actually reaching out to his people and sitting down and getting a sit down with him and talk to him because I think in a lot of ways we're like-minded and I can offer him some insight as to what he's trying to get done or would like to get done with regard to the system that's in place. Because I was a part of the league when we had guaranteed contracts and we gave it away for this thing called Deuce Checkoff. So he understands that the system has to change. You can't have a system in place where, okay, yeah, we give you a guaranteed contract. Is it guaranteed? Yes, guaranteed, but it's only partially guaranteed. What the hell are you talking about? It's not guaranteed then. You know, the system has to change. How we value players have to change. And until that happens, until players want to stand up for it, to your point, I don't think it very much changes.
So you gave up guaranteed contracts. I don't think people know that. I mean, because it wasn't always like it is now. So you gave up guaranteed contracts for what?
There's a thing called dues checkoffs that people probably don't realize. That the way it works is the Players Association is funded by dues, the dues that players, I don't know how much dues are. When I was in the league, I think it was like $3,000. So you take 1,500 players times $3,000, and that's their budget, basically, right? And then they had to come up with other things like Players Inc., which were marketing arms in conjunction with the NFL, where they made players sign the agreement. And so the NFL had the teams and the logos, but the NFL Players Association had the players. So in order for them to get the players and any marketing deals they were doing, they had to come to the Players Association and pay them 20% to do that, whatever the number is. So that was their basis of their budget. So what the league was so astute with, well, hell, they need dues. We'll encourage our players not to pay dues. We'll tell them telling them, why y'all paying dues? You live in Texas. It's a right to work state. You don't have to pay dues. By law, you don't have to pay dues, blah, 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 so on and so forth. And this went around the league where, like, hell, my boy in Dallas ain't paying dues. My guy in Houston's not paying dues. Blah, blah, blah. We're not. Why do we have to pay dues? So you were trying to run an organization, and you weren't properly funded. So we go to the strike. This was the strike before the one I was involved in 87, my strike. So this, I think it was the 82 strike.
Yeah.
Garvey is the president at the time. And so he realized that they cannot continue to run as a union if they don't get dues in. So they said, okay, fine. Yeah, we have guaranteed contract on the table. The owner said, I'll tell you what, we'll help you out. In every standard contract, we'll have a box, and the players have to check it off when they sign their contract. And what that checkoff does, it gives us the right to collect the dues for you. So every player, they check the box when they sign their contract. They don't pay attention. Like, check all these boxes, initial it, and sign your name. No one even reads. They just look at their incentives and all this other stuff. So they check the box. And the owners then collect money from these dues, and they send it to the union. And that's what happened. They gave away free agency for the dues check-offs.
Wow.
That's it.
Well, I think that's a great place to end. So, listen, every day, Monday through Friday, you can catch Sean on 790 AM if you're in the Houston area. If you're not, you can catch him on iHeartRadio. The show is called The Bottom Line, and the new time slot is 3 to 6. How do you guys like the new time slot?
I like it. It's a different format. We added Jason Braddock, who's a young guy. He's been in the game for a little bit on the scouting side. He's done work, self-made, learning, teaching himself how to scout, and does a real good job with fantasy sports and all that. So it's been interesting to have him on there. And, you know, relationship with me and Adam has been around for almost 2 years now. So it's been a lot of fun. Time change is good. Obviously, it's a bigger audience for us. Drive time is a little different for us, but I think we're doing a nice job with it. And then it's been real fun so far. You've been on there. Thank you for gracing us with your presence.
I love the invitation, so just let me know. I like being invited on, so just all you got to do is ask. All right. Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it. Sean Jones, The Bottom Line, 790 AM radio every Monday through Friday in Houston, or you can catch it on iHeartRadio. I will talk to you soon. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. All right, everybody. That was Sean Jones. He's a former Houston Oiler, won a Super Bowl ring with the Green Bay Packers, and has, you know, worked in scouting and front office management of the National Football League, understands the finances of what happens around football, and so it's always just a wealth of information for me. So I appreciate him taking so much time to visit with us today. Good morning to those of you who come in. Good morning, LaWanda. So glad you could be here. I love you, too. That's my godmother. Heaven's Angel, welcome, welcome. And she says, I love my Cowboys. That's okay. You can love your Cowboys on this show. Hello, Derek. Welcome. Thank you guys for being here. So we talked a lot about the Houston Texans. We talked about preseason. We talked about Colin Kaepernick, and we talked about NFL contracts. And so I'm glad that Sean had a chance to share with us really why they don't have guaranteed contracts, how they at a time, and there was a time when they did have guaranteed contracts, and they gave them up for what he called dues checkoff. See, we always learn some cool, neat stuff here on this show. So I appreciate you guys being here. And we didn't talk much about the Houston Astros. We are going to do that next week. I will hope to, well, maybe not next week, but because I may be at camp next week. If not, I will have a guest, a live interview with you about, so we can talk some baseball. But the Astros in a pennant race. They lost last night to the White Sox in Chicago. They just couldn't muster up any offense, right? George Springer's back. That's a good thing, but they just could not seem to get any offense going. They're 71-42. They still lead the American League West. I want to think they have a 6.5 game lead. And so we have a little more than a month and a half of this regular season left. And the Astros, you know, hopefully this little bit of a offensive slump they've had. I hate to call it a slump. It's like whenever the team doesn't score or loses a game, we want to put them in a slump. So we won't call it a slump, but we hope that they turn that thing around. If you are in Houston, or you're coming to Houston or in the Houston area, you should check out the Astros schedule and consider making a stopover at Minute Maid Park. It's a great stadium. It's a great place to watch a baseball game, and it's a really good product. You know, they are winning. People are excited in this town about baseball, and I've actually tuned in to some of the local stations occasionally, and I hear people calling up with Astros questions. So, you know, when you get Astros questions in August, when football season is about to kick off, that says a lot. Now, speaking of football season, you know, we do lots of NFL coverage on this show. I am going to get Mike Haywood back, the head coach over at TSU, and have him join us soon. We will also, you know, talk some college ball, which means for me is TSU and perhaps some Rice and definitely Prairie View and Texas A&M. And I may mention the University of Texas if I just have to. Okay, I'm just saying. But those are the schools that we talk about and schools from around the country on this show. And we college football season is like, it's here. Everybody is practicing, they're in two-a-days, and so a lot to get to. As always, everybody, thank you so much for being a part of today's show. I encourage you to share the video so that we can continue to grow Chalk Talk. Share it with your friends and with your online community. And be sure to sign up to get notifications about the broadcast. Since I've moved the show to my Kim Y. Davis page, it's a little slow building. You guys come on a little later. I appreciate you being here whenever you get here. And so if you get the notifications, you'll be reminded that this is where this is where you can find the show every week. Have a great week. Thank you. We have to meet up soon. And, yes, I am ready for some football. Thank you, Heaven's Angel. I appreciate it. You guys have a great, great week. I will see you next. So I'm going to definitely be here next Thursday. Pay attention and listen for updates because if I am in camp, when I go to camp, I'm going to do shows from camp every day. So we'll be on a whole lot more next week, all right? So until then, make it a great, great week. Have a great weekend. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, at Kim Y. Davis. If you like my page, Kim Y. Davis, on Facebook, I am on Instagram at kim.y.davis, but you can always follow me right here also on Facebook and Blog Talk Radio. Have a great, great week, everybody. I will see you next Thursday, and more than likely, I will see you before then. I lost my Chalk Talk music. All right, have a good week. Thanks for joining me. And also, if you want updates, if you want to sign up for the newsletter, go to my website, kimydavis.com. You'll get updates there, all right? Put in your email address and you'll hear from me online. Have a great week, everybody. I'll see you next weekend.